Today is Friday, December 8th, 2017. My name is Jade Amy, and I'm interviewing local musician Mike Galbraith on the third floor of the Kresge Library at Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Could you tell me a little bit about where you were born and grew up?
Sure. I was born in Garden City, Michigan, suburb west of Detroit. And grew up mainly in the towns of Westland and Livonia, okay, which are also nearby Garden City there. Grew up in Westland, Michigan, but grew up in North Westland. I grew up in North Westland. You didn't go to Westland schools, you go to Livonia schools. So we were right on the border there. And so, kind of bounced between the two towns and for most of my childhood. And then somewhere like around eighth grade or so, my folks got divorced, so kind of split time between my old house in Westland and my grandparents' place in Livonia, pretty close by. And still going to the same schools and same neighborhoods. Yeah.
Right on. How old were you when you got into music?
well, it started, you know, my dad's a musician, my uncle is a musician, my parents are big music lovers, so it was just always around the house, and my dad was always playing guitar around the house. He had a little studio in the basement. My uncles would come over and play guitar, or I would watch my another uncle play drums in his rock band and stuff like that. And then I must have been seven or so, my dad was taking piano lessons, and he decided that he didn't have enough time for piano lessons and work and everything. And as a little kid, I was super bummed out about that. I thought it was the coolest thing, him playing piano in the house and stuff. I really enjoyed it. And so he said, you know, if you like it so much, why don't you do it? So I said, all right, I will. And I lasted about 2 years. I really hated piano lessons. Mm-hmm. So I could, it's tough on a little kid being cooped up and practicing. And
right.
Having to go over to the teacher's house for lessons when you could be outside with your friends. Stuff like that. I just didn't have the discipline as a kid. But I'm glad I took them when I did, and I wish I had stuck with it because I wish I could be better at piano. However, so I did that for a couple years, stopped that, and then middle school, I had joined the middle school band class. And the first day of class, you get to decide what instruments or what instrument you wanted to play. And I had gone in, you know, seventh grade, I had gone in wanting to play the saxophone. That was the idea. That's what I had in my head first day. But then as we were going around the room and everyone was picking instruments, I hadn't realized that drums were an option. So I got really excited and chose the drums. So that was a lot of fun, and I stuck with that through middle school. But then when high school hit, it was the same teacher as middle school and high school. He taught at both schools. And I just didn't like him very much. And I had decided that I didn't want to keep doing it in high school. So I stopped playing drums. And then, you know, I grew up around the guitar just always. But I had never really taken an interest in it. But then, and my dad never, you know, forced it on me or my brother. Like, we just, you know, is what he did. And if we wanted to get to it eventually, we would. So that's what happened. I just kind of found it on my own. Just after school, I kind of started picking up his guitar and flipping through chord books and just kind of teaching myself how to play. And then he had discovered that I was doing that, and so he kind of nudged me along and helped me out and showed me different things. So I was probably, you know, probably about 14 years old when I really started playing music with intent.
Nice.
Yeah.
So do you still play drums and piano here?
I love to. I don't play them well. I mean, I can play chords on the piano. Mm-hmm. And if I concentrate really hard and take it really slowly, I can still read music, but it takes a while.
Yeah.
And with drums, I can play rudimentary stuff and kind of hang in the pocket, but I'm not super fancy or anything. But it's, out of all the things, playing drums is still the most fun.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm not the best at it.
Right.
It's not my main instrument. It's so much fun to play drums.
I agree. I definitely agree. So you stated 14 was when you started really getting into music.
Mm-hmm.
Is that when you knew you wanted to be a musician, or did that come later?
I would say that came later. I had I had teenage fantasies about being in bands and things, but it wasn't something I had really considered as a real possibility.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of just like a passion project, and I just loved doing it, and I got wrapped up into it, and I would just spend, you know, hours in my room just playing guitar and writing songs pretty early on. I never took lessons for guitar, just kind of taught myself, and I would teach myself two chords at a time, and kind of pretty naturally, pretty quickly, just started writing songs right off the bat. So,
okay. Yeah.
It wasn't until, I don't even know when it was when that happened, when I decided I wanted to play music as a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in college.
Where did you go to college?
I went to school at Central Michigan University.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
What did you study?
I was a creative writing major.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Nice. So I had gone there with the intent of joining the journalism school. And I took the first year or two of college, I really wasn't into it. And mm-hmm. I was pretty ready to drop out and move to California or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I thought I would give it one more semester. And I just kind of willy-nilly took a creative writing workshop and just kind of fell in love with it and kind of fell into that, and that's what kept me in school and graduated with that.
Nice.
But, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
How did you get into the Detroit music scene?
Well, I took a long way around doing it. So I had a band in college. I had a rock band, and Mount Pleasant's a pretty small town, so there wasn't a lot of bands in town. And we were playing all the time, and it was a lot of fun. And that became more of a thing for me than school did.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but as college bands go, you know, people graduate and they move on. So we went from, we had a five-piece, and then I think we ended up with a three-piece with a different bass player. And, you know, it just changed over time. And then I myself had graduated and moved away from Mount Pleasant, so then the band stopped. And then I moved back to Westland for a second there, and kind of stopped playing music for a little bit. I mean, I would play guitar again in my house, but I stopped playing shows. I stopped having a band. I stopped thinking about it full time. I got like a travel job for a little bit, and I was just driving around the country, taking photos for Chrysler, which was weird and fun. And so I was all over the place doing that, and I mean, I still loved music and I still thought about it, but it just wasn't like my primary thing. And that job had ended. It was like a contract job, and the time had run out, and then I came back to Michigan. I didn't know where I was going to go or what I was going to do, still not really thinking about music. And then my friends had a spare room in Chicago, so I had moved there. I lived there for a few years, worked at a publishing house, and still kind of just playing guitar in my room, but not really thinking about it too much. And then I had reached a point in Chicago where I just realized I wasn't going to be happy on the track that I was on. And that kind of coincided with me starting to play guitar again and writing songs again. And I played a couple open mics around Chicago. Didn't really like the Chicago music scene. And so So I moved home. I left Chicago. I had figured that I would move somewhere that was more music-centric. So I had decided that I was going to move somewhere like Austin or Seattle. And that would have been around 2008. And I came back to Westland just to kind of regroup, save some money, and go. And then a friend of a friend needed someone to house it in the North Corktown neighborhood of Detroit. And so I did that just as kind of a lark and, you know, as free place to stay and save some money and get out of town. But then I started playing music around town, around Detroit. And I kind of fell into the music community here and realized how much I loved it and that it was probably better than Seattle or Austin anyhow. Certainly better than Chicago. So, yeah, and then I kind of just stayed. I lived in North Corktown for a little bit. I did leave for a little while. I drove around the country for a year and played guitar in random bars and cafes and slept on couches and in my car and stuff. And but then I came back and moved back and got an apartment in Corktown, and I've been here ever since.
Nice. Yeah. It's strange. I lived in Chicago for 10 years.
And, oh, wow. Yeah.
My BA is actually in talent management, so I worked in a music management company for a while. And, yeah, the Chicago music scene isn't something I'm particularly fond of. It got very draining after a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I had experienced, like, you know, I was just getting my feet under me and, like, I just played a few open mics and it was going well already. Like, my songwriting was getting a lot better from when I was in college doing the rock band thing. But I had no, like, real, like, objective or anything. I just wanted to get out there and start playing music again. And I would run into these people at the open mics and they were so upset that they weren't famous yet or they weren't being written about in blogs. And I could care less. Like, I just, you know, I was really turned off by, like, they were really... they were young kids. It wasn't like they were like old timers who had been passed over. Like, there was no sense of community. It was all just everyone trying to get a leg up on one another. And that's kind of when I moved back here and saw how deep rooted the sense of community was. And nobody cared, you know, if anyone was paying attention or not. It was more about creating something, and, you know, and people going to each other's shows and supporting each other. And it was completely different.
Yeah, it's amazing how different it is. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of work in the Detroit music scene while working in Chicago, and I far preferred working with Detroit bands than Chicago artists, just because the mentality is so different.
Sure.
It's really interesting how cities are different that way as far as music communities, or art communities, I guess, go. Mm-hmm. This is a pretty cliche question, but what inspires and influences you to write music?
Everything. Like, I think nowadays, and it's always, it changes. I find that it's changed over the years. I think nowadays, like, what I've found is that, like, I had, when I was doing the creative writing thing at Central, I was writing short stories, and I was into that, and I thought that's what I was going to do, and I had plans to go back and get, like, an MFA and all that stuff, and I really, really loved writing short stories. But then when I started playing music again in Sincerity, and I had, I found that it was tough to write short stories and songs at the same time and give them both the attention they deserved. So I started to get more and more into storytelling songs with a narrative, and I found that I could kind of do both. I could write short stories over the course of a song, you know, and kind of combine the two. So that's what motivates me, I guess, is trying to find compelling stories and tell them through song.
All right. What would be compelling if you wanted to elaborate more on that?
Sure. Well, it's just a matter of picking up on things and just I guess an example would be there's a song I have a recent record called Finster. And the first song is a song called She Doesn't Work Here Anymore. And it's a song that there's no chorus or hook or refrain or anything. It's just four verses. And it was kind of started as a songwriting exercise. Like I love like a song like Bob Dylan's Boots of Spanish Leather, where it's the same sort of deal. But it's, even though there's no chorus and there's no hook and nothing repeats, it's one of the most engaging songs. And by the end, it just, you know, it's only 3.5-4 minutes long, but if you listen to the lyrics from front to back, and by the end, like the last few lines, just are devastating. So I had approached that particular song with the Dylan song in mind, and just you know, I have a lot of friends that work in bars and restaurants, and you know, I'd meet them after their shifts or after a show or something, and they'd be complaining about their work day. And so I kind of just started jotting ideas down, lyrics off of that, listening to them, and kind of came up with this story of a restaurant. It could be anywhere, and it's not really defined, but say a restaurant, and everyone's favorite waitress quits. And but it's told from the perspective of like an assistant manager talking on the phone with a customer calling to see if she was working that day. And and it kind of carries on over four verses. And when I started playing it, I thought, I don't know if people are going to pick up on this because I'm playing in bars and stuff. And it's just really not, you know, you have to get people's attention and you kind of have to listen to that song. And it turned out to be like one of people's favorite songs, and I get asked to play all the time, so it's surprising, but also, you know, gratifying.
Mm-hmm. What's been your favorite performance to date?
Of my own?
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, I have a lot. One of my all-time faves was, there used to be a great bar in Ferndale called Club Bart.
Okay.
It was on Woodward, just south of 9 Mile. And I remember when I was at Central looking up places to play in Detroit, we didn't come down to Detroit too often. We'd played in Mount Pleasant and Lansing and Kalamazoo and Grand Rapids, other college towns. But we were trying to get down here. It was hard for us to. No one knew who we were. And it was kind of, I mean, the internet was around, but it was well before social media, early 2000s. And I remember seeing online, like, different Detroit venues, and for whatever reason, Club Bart had stuck out, and I was like, man, that just looks like the coolest place to play. And it was the tiniest bar, and I had never even been there before. I just looked at, like, the bands they were getting and just the overall vibe, and I was like, man, one day. And so then, you know, fast forward, and I moved back after Chicago, and I started playing around town again, more as just a solo singer-songwriter guy. And I went around to Club Bart and started getting gigs there, and it was the craziest place, like super small and like really close-knit community people. And the stage was like above and behind the bar. So like all the liquor bottles were in front of the stage, and you were playing behind the bartenders in this little corner. But it just added to the whole vibe of the place. Anyhow, so I had finally played there, and I started playing there pretty regularly, once a month or so. And I had a gig booked there on like a Thursday night 5 or 6 years ago. And the bartender came running up to me as I was walking in with my gear. And she's like, Bart just sold the place. This is the last weekend. This is it. And everyone was super shocked. It came out of nowhere. And so I just, by happenstance, I happened to be like the last like booked act to play there.
Oh, wow.
They had the rest of the weekend. They had like a party and bands would play, but like they canceled like the what they had booked and scheduled, and just had like a willy nilly type thing. But so I was like the last like booked act there, and it just kind of turned into this celebration of the place, and everyone was engaged and having fun and singing along to songs, and it was kind of a wild time. But yeah, it just kind of, it was just one of those moments, you know, where you get caught up in everything and it, everything just kind of works out. It was a lot of fun. And so that's more of a sentimental one, but mm-hmm. it was special. It was cool.
Nice. Well, since you kind of mentioned it, what would be your favorite performance of somebody else's?
Well, there's been a lot. I saw Neil Young in the late 90s at the Fox Theater, where he just played solo acoustic just by himself, and he surrounded himself by like six guitars and a piano and organ and banjo. And he would just kind of wander around the stage and pick one up and start playing a song. And we had good seats and we were super close, and he's like my dad's favorite. And so in turn, he became one of my favorites because he was always on, and he's amazing. And, so I just grew up with him. He was like a third grandpa or something, you know. He's just always, always around. So, and I'd seen him twice before, once with Crazy Horse and then once with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. But to see him play solo acoustic by himself, and it was super intimate and super special, and he sounded so great. Yeah, that was pretty special.
Nice.
Yeah.
What is your songwriting process like?
Well, it varies from song to song, from moment to moment. Sometimes I sit down and just play guitar with no real designs on writing a song or thinking about lyrics or melodies. I just kind of mindlessly strum or pick or pluck or whatever. And it's kind of, sometimes you just stumble into something, you know. So, and then you just kind of save it and keep it in the back of your mind. And then same thing with writing. Sometimes I'll sit down to write and I have an idea. A lot of times it just starts with kind of a couplet of just a real quick rhyme, something that I thought was interesting or you know, good. and just kind of keep that in a little notebook. I have like pages and pages of just starting off points. And then kind of keep those around and depending, kind of sit down and flesh that out, and sometimes you can write five songs off the same starting off point, and, you know, until you get the right one. A lot of times, too, just sit down and do a lot of free writing, free verse, and just kind of get pages and pages of just a lot of nonsense going until you stumble across something that's, you know, worth pursuing. And then kind of combining the two, you know, just see what works melodically and especially rhythmically and within meter of the chord progression and the lyrics, and see kind of how it shakes out, and hammer it out from there and just keep reworking it and reworking it. Every once in a while you'll sit down and you'll have an idea and you just start playing some chords and it all just kind of comes together out of nowhere. And you're done in like 10, 15 minutes. And that's crazy. And then you think, well, that was too easy. You know, that shouldn't have happened. Like, why? That doesn't make sense. That was too easy. It must not be very good. It was too easy, you know? But then you play it for people and it turns out to be their favorite song. So you never know. You could work. I mean, I've worked years on songs. And trying to get them right, and I mean, it's a fun process. The best part is always the process of songwriting itself. So, you know, it doesn't even matter sometimes if you finish them or not. It's just the act of doing it. But yeah, I mean, I have chord progressions from 10, 15 years ago that I haven't used yet because I just haven't found the right melodies or lyrics or whatever fits them. And then, you know, you sit down with it one day and all of a sudden it works. And you're like, oh, finally, holy cow. Because if you save something that long, chances are, like, you like it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's worth saving.
Right.
So, but you don't want to force it. Like, I've forced songs before, and you can tell. And if, you know, people aren't responding to it and reacting to it or engaged with it, then you can tell. And you got to go back to the drawing board, I guess. So, yeah, certain chord progressions will get, you know, 10 different sets of lyrics, see which one works. Different tempos and rhythms and time signatures and rearrangements. And yeah, it's just, even now, like, you know, songs that are done, technically done, quote unquote, I mean, you play them live long enough, you change them still. Maybe 5-10 years later, you find a new way to sing something or emphasize something, and it totally changes it, just the smallest change. So even though it's been recorded and people know it a certain way, they do evolve. Yeah.
Do you, when you want to say your songwriting, do you have like a particular way that you want to release it in mind? Do you songwrite like that? Write songs like that?
Mm-hmm.
Or like, I'm going to release an LP or an EP. Do you focus on that for songwriting? Or,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Not so much, no. It's not something I really think about. For me, kind of the reward is in the work itself. So, like, I just love the process of songwriting and finishing one and working on them, and that's really all I care about. I really enjoy performing and enjoying songs with people, or sharing songs with people, and enjoying songs with people too, but I never really think about, like, should this have I guess a little bit, should it have a band behind it or other instruments, but I typically don't pursue it too much. I like the bare bones aspect of just solo acoustic guitar, harmonica, voice. And I never really think about EPs or LPs or singles. I do those things, and I'm working on an EP right now, but it's not my most primary concern. It happens, it's part of it, and certainly, like, it's an important part. I mean, people that like your songs, they want to have something to listen to at home or in the car or wherever. So, I mean, it's an important part of it, but it's my least favorite part.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like recording. I had the college rock band, and I got really burnt out, and that's probably one of the reasons I stopped playing music for a while, is I got really burnt out of, like, being the singer-songwriter lead of the band. People look to you to solve inner band issues and stuff, and I just got tired of, like, managing people's egos and personalities, and the guitar player doesn't like what the drummer's doing, the drummer doesn't like what the bass player's doing, the bass player doesn't care, stuff like that. I like being a self-contained unit and not having to worry about other people and manage their issues. So I'm always drawn to performing solo, and I like being able to take off at a moment's notice and drive around the country and play guitar and not worry about, you know, other people. Mm-hmm. So things like recording, like I just recorded recently, and we assembled a really top-notch group of musicians, and it was super fun, and I'm super proud of how they turned out, and it's exciting. And it's kind of unexpected, but I'm really happy with it. So it's... you know, it's a push-pull. Like, and that was a situation where, you know, I have, like, a manager now and, like, a production deal and stuff like that. So they're the ones who kind of push me, and sometimes you probably have to push me to do things, because otherwise I'll just do what I want, which is not always the, you know, maybe it's not always the best option, but, like, that's just what it is. And so it's good to have those people pushing me now to do things like this, because they turned out really well, and I'm happy with it. But if they disappeared tomorrow, I'd probably go back to just performing solo. And I've never been interested in records as, like, as concepts, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, I always like records as documents, like, as an actual record of time. So this is what happened on this day, or this particular session or moment. You know, what I enjoy listening to most is often live recordings of my favorite artists and demo sessions that they did, and bootlegs, and stuff before they came in with, like, a, this is, you know, this is the album. This is, I'm always more interested in the process of what led up to that, and then the expression of that later, maybe, in a live setting. But, you know, something like, I don't know, like Sgt. Pepper's or something, like, it's just not something that's ever really interested me. It's just not, you know. So I love, you know, I look at, like, the jazz guys, and certainly, like, they came at it with, you know, a concept, I guess, like Love Supreme or something. But, you know, someone like Miles or Monk, like, they could record the same song 5 times over the course of their career, and it would change every time. They weren't afraid to put it on different records or live recordings. And it's always been interesting to me, because I see it more as a process than, like, a finished concept. So, yeah, it's something. It's a push and pull.
Mm-hmm.
Tugs me in a lot of different directions, I guess.
What is your opinion of the current state of music in Detroit and Michigan?
Well, I mean, at the risk of sounding like a homer, like, I think it's phenomenal. I think the songwriters in Detroit and the surrounding region and into across the river and into Ontario are some of the best. I always maintain that Detroit in general, the region, has just the best native talent I've ever been around. You know, I've been in Nashville a lot recently, and of course everyone in Nashville is great, but they're all from somewhere else. None of them are from Nashville. Same thing with Seattle or New York or Los Angeles, Chicago. I've never been in a town like Detroit where it has so much, just everyone's from here, and just the quality of work is phenomenal. People like, you know, Don Dupree and John Freeman, and, like, I mean, I could name a ton. Yeah, that's crazy. Crazy good. And that's just the songwriting community. Obviously, you know, there's rock bands everywhere and indie bands everywhere and hip-hop and, you know, soul and R&B and jazz, and there's just so much. It's pretty special around here. I think, I don't know how much support exists for some people that deserve it, that they might get, you know, if some of these songwriters in town moved to Nashville, they'd be getting all sorts of attention all of a sudden, but because they're in Detroit, you don't get some. And then maybe that, and, you know, that's what they want, probably. Otherwise, they would move there, presumably. But, you know, Detroit's not like a... Detroit's an attitude town. So, like, there's a certain attitude with the rock bands and the indie rock bands and all the different variations. And it's an attitude town and not, you know, so, there's a certain earnestness to singer-songwriters that kind of puts them on the outskirts of town. It's not a big singer-songwriter town, not a big country town, not a big folk town. You could probably move to Ann Arbor and do it there with a little more attention, but even then, I don't know. So support is weird here for people like that, but, you know, it seems like that's all right. I mean, I don't think a lot of people care. A lot of the songwriters, I don't think they care. I mean, otherwise they would move to Nashville or something. So, but the level of talent is really some of the best in the country, for sure.
Cool. How does the history of Detroit and its current events within the city influence your music?
I don't know, you know. I think when I moved here in 2008 to North Corktown, I didn't intend on staying here, and then I found the community so healthy, the music community, like just as far as healthy spiritually, emotionally, that, you know, that's what drew me to it. And it was different 10 years ago. It was, the city itself was different 10 years ago. And there was a lot of space. It was a time before a lot of people were moving here. Like a lot of kids from the suburbs were moving into town. So it was like before all this giant development wave that's happening in greater downtown. A lot more artists used to live here, I feel like, and a lot of them have moved away to cheaper places because rent's gone up and bars have changed. And, you know, local dive bar turns into a Spanish tapas place or something, or a bistro or whatever. And, you know, it changes the scene. And there's certainly a lot of new bars that have opened up. I mean, there's a ton of new venues and... there are a little more money behind them and a different, little less community driven, it feels like. So certainly that affects, I don't think it affects my writing. I don't write about like city issues or anything like that. It might influence my writing in some way that I don't know about, but I don't have like a gentrification song that I can think of or anything like that, you know. But I think it's still a great place for artists to live and create, and that's why I'm still here. But I don't know. It's changing for sure, and I don't know how much room it's going to have for young artists to really explore themselves in a way that they could 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Do you think Detroit would, in the future, be a place where people, artists move to, like say, like you mentioned, like Chicago or Seattle?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I mean, I already meet a ton of people from Brooklyn that moved here from Brooklyn or San Francisco or Toronto, places where, you know, where housing prices are just out of control, mm-hmm. and they want to be artists and they want to live somewhere where they can afford that's also somewhere that's, you know, special. Detroit's special. You know, it's different than, I don't want to throw any cities under the bus, but, like, it's different from, you know, somewhere else. And name your city than Orlando, you know, whatever, right? So Detroit's different. Detroit's special. It is, and has a character to it that other places don't. And so I think artists want to live places like that. You know, Brooklyn is a place like that. San Francisco, but those are places that have just been, you know, out of control development and things getting so expensive. And I don't think, you know, you stay here long enough and you see the changes and everything and you're like, oh man, I can't believe it's happening here. Like I had left, when I lived in Chicago, the neighborhood I was living in was just starting to change, like in really like oversaturate with development and stuff, and I Like, it just turned me off. It was just changing. Every time I found a coffee shop I liked, it would turn into a bank or something, you know? So I was just like, I'm over it. And I came, when I came here, I looked around and was like, there's no way that'll ever happen here. This is awesome. I want to live here. Like, there's no way, like, my favorite coffee shop's going to get, like, you know, overpriced and outpriced and forced to close or anything like that. But it's starting to happen.
Right. Yeah.
And it totally took me by surprise. Because I really didn't think it was going to happen. So now that it is, you know, it's happening to a degree, but in, like, in a very Detroit way where, you know, you can still, you get caught up in it if you stay in town for too long. But then if you go out of town and travel around, you see what's happening in Nashville or Chicago or Seattle and how much they've changed over the past 10 years. And you're like, well, Detroit's still a long, long way from that, you know. So that's reassuring. And I don't know if it'll, if like the super development will keep happening or if it'll slow down. You know, who knows? It's pretty uncharted territory for Detroit. But, yeah. What was the question?
Oh, the question. How does the history of Detroit and its current events influence your music?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was the question. How do you think Detroit music from the past and present influences music elsewhere?
Well, I mean, you know, it's, I think it's ever present, you know. What happened, especially what happened in the 60s and 70s, I mean, still informs modern music today probably more than most other scenes with either rock and roll or R&B, soul music, pop music. You know, I think most kind of hip indie rock bands in any town would cite the MC5 and the Stooges as like their touchstone bands, you know, and I mean, look at like the songs that, you know, Smokey Robinson wrote and Marvin Gaye, and that style of melding R&B music with pop music. I mean, that's still what everyone listens to on the radio today. Just a little slicker production, but it's, you know, it's the same thing. So, yeah, I think it's, yeah. I don't know too many other scenes that have really shaped music in the 21st century the way Detroit had in the 20th century.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And my last question, what do you think the future of music holds for Detroit?
Oh, I don't know. It's always changing. It's always interesting. There's always, yeah. I don't know. It's hard to say. I think scenes change and evolve. You know, the songwriter community I was a part of 3 years ago is different today. New people drop out, people get added on. And I'm sure the same things are happening with, you know, I don't know trend-wise, or I don't know, like, what the next, like subgenre is going to be, like, super cool, but I think music will always be ever-present and hugely important here and important to the city's identity, and I don't think that'll ever change, you know. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Yeah. Well, those are all the questions I had. Is there anything that you wanted to add or?
Well, yeah. No, I got. It's up to you.
Well, I don't have any other questions. Yeah. So I'm good with this. If you are.
Sure.
All right, cool. Well, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with me.
Of course.
And taking the time out to do that.
Yeah.